It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bejarano.
Welcome to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bejarano, and joining me in the studio today is Dr. Robert L. McCauley. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
So Dr. McCauley is an emergency room physician and also the medical director of the Good Shepherd emergency room. And I just wanted to ask you to kind of start off, is what got you into emergency medicine? How did you choose that as your specialty?
Good question. I was actually in a small town similar to Hermiston, a little bit larger, and I was doing internal medicine, and they had a lot of turnover in the emergency department and not much stability, and I was approached by the hospital to consider making this switch, which I wasn't really comfortable with without some more training. And it just so happened that Duke University at the time had a little one-year transitional fellowship available. It doesn't even exist any longer. And I went and I did that, and then I came back and made the change. And I liked it because I felt like it gave me a little bit more control of my life, but yet really kept me involved in real medicine. So that was kind of what led me there.
So to be an emergency room physician at Good Shepherd or in general, is there like a certification that is required for that?
It depends. I mean, that's a difficult question in that we prefer residency-trained emergency physicians, and that's what we're actively recruiting for our hospital. But there's a real crisis in America. There will never be enough emergency-trained physicians to meet all the slots available during my career. So as a backup to that, what we try to do is we take people who are boarded in other specialties, such as family practice or internal medicine, and have either done some more training or have obtained many years of experience, and try to fill the slots with that. And that's a very, very common scenario, not just to a place like Good Shepherd, but all across America.
In larger places as well.
Yes.
So I understand before you came to Good Shepherd, you were actually the regional director of emergency medicine for a medical group. Is that correct?
Correct. Team Health.
Team Health. Okay. And how many ERs, I guess, and how many physicians did you oversee?
It varied from year to year. I've been with Team Health since 2001. And Team Health started out as an emergency medicine company. It's, depending on the month, maybe the largest or second largest in America. Wow. I was with the West group, and I started out overseeing six or seven emergency departments and directors and peaked at about 18. I also helped with, we had a couple major acquisitions, one in the Austin, Texas market and another in the Las Vegas market. And I helped with the transition in those places as well.
Wow. So what drew you, I guess, away from that position to decide to come and work in Hermiston at Good Shepherd?
Well, Hermiston ended up, Good Shepherd became one of my hospitals, and I had been doing that position for about roughly 8 years, and quite honestly, it just kept growing and growing, and it got to the point where it was basically a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day job week, and just getting to the point of my career, I thought, I don't mind working hard, but I want to have a little bit of fun again. I mean, I hadn't golfed in 5 years, didn't travel. I was just working. So I saw an opportunity, and I discussed it with my bosses at the time. They discussed some other opportunities with me in Western Washington, but I chose to come to Good Shepherd. I just thought it looked like what attracted me about Good Shepherd was I had met the administration in several meetings, and I saw a real commitment to just continually improving the quality and the culture.
So that leads into another line of questioning here. Just, you talked a little bit about improving the ER itself and the culture of the ER and the care it delivers. I'm assuming that's probably what you mean. And so what kind of improvements have been made over the past year, just to kind of educate our community on what that actually looks like?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, there's the I really break it down into two different things. There's the patient experience, which has to do with flow and how we get people through the department. But obviously, if you have good flow and lousy quality, that doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But also, if you have great quality and you can't get people seen and taken care of, it doesn't matter either. When I was at Duke, one thing they taught me was you're just as responsible for the person in the waiting room as you are for the patient that you're seeing at the bedside. And I really take that to heart, and I think it's very important. And so from the metric side, we've made great improvements. I think when we first arrived here, the time from the patient checked in to the time that they were actually seen was getting close to an hour.
Wow.
And for a place of this volume and having done my previous job, I know that that's just too long. Right now, our median, I think, is about 18 minutes, which we're happy with. And I think we can do a little bit better. I think you'll always probably be around 10 to 15 minutes, mm-hmm. but which I think is a very good number. But that's one place we've made a real change, and it shows because what happens is people aren't coming into the emergency department feeling like they can't be seen and turning around and having to walk away or left without being seen, or patients who come to the department who feel like it's too long to wait and walk out the front door, that number's dropped like a rock as well. So that's one half of it. The other thing is that we follow things like we have certain metrics that we follow on the quality side. We look at mm-hmm. how do we treat heart attacks, how quickly do we get them out the door. We look at how we treat sepsis, which is a really big silent killer, and how well do we enact our protocol and what time frames are we doing things, how quickly are we giving antibiotics, how quickly are we giving the IV fluids that are required. And we've made improvements on all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we do that's unique to Team Health and our relationship with Good Shepherd that I think is really kind of neat and on my mind right now because it's that time of year for our company. Every single year, our company, and we see, I think this year we'll have 25 million patient contacts.
Wow.
From that database, we'll take our experience of where are we missing the boat? Where are we dropping the ball the most as a company out of everywhere? And then we create a test that simulates 6 work shifts.
Mm-hmm.
We do it on the computer, and everybody who's going to touch a patient that works for Team Health has to do that and complete it every single year. I don't care how high up the food chain you are. If you're going to touch a patient, you have to take that test.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and I think it's a great add-on. I think it's a great benefit, and I think one caveat about that, what's interesting, when I go to our national meetings, and I have one coming up here next month, often they'll show the data of here was our experience 2 years ago, and maybe we were missing some sort of stroke thing, and we were mm-hmm. having poor outcomes. Here's our data now. And you can see a direct, we addressed it, we made a difference. What's our next project?
It's awesome.
Great. Yeah.
It's incredible that you can do that and that you can actually track those metrics. I think it's really important for our community to understand when you talk about the customer experience. You know, in today's society, everybody wants things now. You know, we expect immediacy. And I know it's probably no different in medicine and when people come to the emergency room, but just sharing those metrics of, you know, 18 minutes versus waiting an hour, that's incredible before somebody actually would be able to get in to be seen by a physician, right? Not just a nurse.
Correct. No, that's the actual provider time. And granted, I mean, I didn't want to be clear. I mean, that's a median time. So there are times where certain days, Mondays are typically a busy day.
Okay.
There are certain times and ebbs and flows in the day when things can get kind of crazy for a little while. But that's just the nature of emergency medicine. And so mm-hmm. that's when triage really comes into play. Who's sickest? How do we take them? But one other thing we've done in our emergency department, and Lucas Bradshaw set this up right about the time we were coming, was we've set up a fast track. So what's traditionally happened in the emergency department, if you just come with a cold or a sprained ankle, well, you might wait for a few hours because you're behind somebody with a heart attack or pneumonia or sepsis, whatever the case may be. Well, our fast track, we don't let sick people back there. So it keeps that free to move those less ill patients, but patients who have real needs to be seen more quickly. And so that really helps us.
Mm.
And so I think that's been a big step in the development of the ER, and I think it's been really helpful to our community.
Just so for our listeners can get a better understanding, Lucas Bradshaw is actually the department manager of the emergency room, and you guys kind of work together
very much so.
Quite regularly and frequently to make sure that you're providing the best care possible from the physician side and then also from the hospital side.
Correct.
Okay. And a fast track ER is not a new concept. I mean, that's something that's been around for quite some time. And you mentioned a little bit about how patients that would be potentially seen in the fast track are like colds, maybe sprained ankles, maybe a cut.
Laceration.
Sure. How about flu?
Depending on the comorbidities. So if I went in with the flu, I would probably be going to fast track.
Okay.
If I was diabetic, elderly, I would probably be going to the main ED.
Okay. So it really depends on what their level of severity is and also their age.
We
if
do
they have other conditions that might be
correct.
Affecting them.
It's okay. Based on severity. And also, we also base it upon, and this has been well studied, we base it upon nursing resources.
Okay.
So if you're going to need IV fluids, even though we may know already, you're probably going to be able to go home, mm-hmm. but you're going to use more nursing resources, then we put you in a different type of bed because we really want to be able to turn those beds over quickly just so that we can keep a good flow there. We want to have a good flow so that patients feel like they're being seen. Well, they are being seen and they are being treated and they get on with their day or on with their life.
Absolutely, and get out as quickly as possible.
Sure.
Okay. So as far as educating our community on what things they should actually come to the ER for, what would you recommend? Because I know there's other levels of care that Good Shepherd has in place that our community can take advantage of. So like virtual care or urgent care or primary care, for example. So how do you help people determine where they should go so that way they don't end up in the wrong place using resources and getting a bigger bill potentially than what they really need?
Well, I think it depends on the day of the week. But typically, we all know if you think you're having a heart attack, you don't need to go to your primary care doctor.
Absolutely.
And they don't want you there. We don't want you there. We want you with us. That's fine. Grandma woke up this morning, can't get out of her own bed. We understand. She needs to come to us. But there are a lot of things that really should go through your primary care office. And so if you have a primary provider, often that's your first phone call because often they will help direct you where to go.
Okay.
Sometimes if they think that it's something they could see but maybe can't see that day, they can encourage you to go to urgent care, which the urgent care has been a huge help in this community. I think it's really making more of an impact now. I think we mm-hmm. see the impact of the urgent care in the emergency department, and I think that's a real help. I think if one thing that hurts emergency departments across America is, I think, two things. One is we're seeing more and more chronic problems.
Mm.
We realize these are real issues, but they really slow down the emergency department and keep us from sometimes getting things that we need to be able to get to. The other is I've talked to a lady just yesterday when I was working, her inability to access primary care, both because of her income level and the availability. And, you know, it was a very difficult conversation because I really felt sorry for the lady. I mean, it's just, we do live in challenging times. And as I tell my colleagues, sometimes they say, well, that person didn't really need to be here. Well, where are they going to go?
Mm.
You know, and we are America's safety net.
That's what the emergency
room
is.
That's what
we do. Yeah.
We want to use it as wisely as we can. But at the end of the day, we're there to catch whatever's falling, really.
Okay. Well, let's give our listeners an example of what some of those chronic conditions might actually be, just so that way they can get a better understanding of, you know, if they suffer from those, where they should actually go.
Well, I can just tell you right now, the number one that everybody's looking at, including the state medical board, is chronic pain issues.
Okay.
We see a lot of chronic pain issues, and I think the days of coming to the emergency department and getting more narcotic-type pain medicines to hold you over, quote, I think those are really coming to an end because mm-hmm. everybody's being watched. And it's not even whether we believe you're legitimate or illegitimate. We are being watched about mm-hmm. how our prescribing habits have never been so closely watched in the past. So that would be one.
Mm-hmm.
We see people for high blood pressure that, honestly, these are things that you typically need to just be seeing your doctor for. High blood pressure in the short term typically isn't a statistically a problem. but it can be if it's not treated over time, and time being months, years. And so those are the sorts of things we want people to be established, because even though I can treat your blood pressure today, how I really need to treat your blood pressure is longitudinally. Mm-hmm. So I need to be able to have a relationship with you and follow up with you. And so we're happy to help in the short term, but you really need somebody to help you long term with things like that. Diabetes is just a big problem in America.
Yeah.
It's not managed well by patients, and mostly by patients, because it's a compliance issue, because it's not a fun disease to have.
No, yeah. All right, so as far as what kinds of people should come to the ER, what is your recommendation there?
Well, certain things we really don't like to miss, and we don't like to see them later. Number one, strokes. We like to see strokes as soon as possible. And I still see a lot of people coming in several hours after a stroke.
Mm.
I got up, I couldn't move my arm, and I went back to bed. And that's tragic. But you'd be surprised how often we see that. You know, if you think you're having a stroke, let us sort it out. And that's our job. And while we're on that, I would like to mention how we do that at Good Shepherd for a moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'd be great.
We use a telestroke system, and we work with the neurologist out of Legacy Emmanuel Hospital. It's a great system. I've used another system similar to this at another hospital. I think this one's even a little bit better.
Mm.
So if you come in and you're thinking you're having a stroke, and especially if it's not clear to us, we get this telemonitor set up, and you're literally speaking to a neurologist in Portland. He can examine you, look at you, evaluate you, and make the best recommendation whether you should get the thrombolytics, or as people call them, the clot-busting drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They also will help us with other neurologic emergencies that aren't related to strokes, but it's a great program. But strokes is one we really don't like people to sit on.
Yeah.
The other one is heart attacks. I mean, we see a lot of chest pain, but it's part of the job, and it's part of what we have to sort out. And we don't like to see, I saw a gentleman this weekend that had a heart attack probably the day or the one or two days before. We don't like to see that. We like to see them within a few hours if we can.
Mm-hmm.
So those are real things. Go ahead.
So just so our patients and our listeners know the difference, why is it important to see them? Why is immediacy so important?
Oh, great question. Well, the literature's changed a little bit with stroke, but in general, we started out saying you had 3 hours. You have 4.5 to 6 hours to be treated totally for a stroke. So let's just say, for the sake of this program, less than three is best. And it's always the faster we see you, the better. But it is, once you get outside a certain time window with stroke, you're no longer an eligible candidate for the thrombolytics.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because the risk-benefit ratio, they do have real risks. So it's not a drug without risk. If it was without risk, we'd probably still give it. With heart attacks, it's the same way. What we're trying to do is we're trying to preserve heart tissue. Or as I say to people, imagine you own a field and it's 100 acres. That 100 acres is your heart muscle. Well, we would like to limit you to losing 10 acres, not 40 acres of that field.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do. And time helps us keep more of that.
Okay. And that definitely brings it home to our agricultural community for sure. That's something they can relate to. Another question I want to ask you is, I understand the hospital is actually a level 3 trauma center. So what is trauma, and what does the level 3 designation actually mean?
Well, the state, or all states, but Oregon and Washington, they're very similar, but they try to create a trauma web. Think of it like a spider web with a central focus. And what they try to do is they know that any major trauma has to eventually get brought in towards the center of the web.
Mm.
The further each layer you go out, the first layer means that you have neurosurgical services and everything available 24/7 in-house.
Okay.
The second layer, you have many of those services, but they aren't in-house. Third layer, you don't have those services. So you don't have neurosurgeons, you don't have necessarily all the orthopedic services or all the different trauma services.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do in those hospitals? You have to still have a system that allows somebody in a major car accident or a major industrial accident to get taken care of and get to the right place and survive to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's worth mentioning that Chris Keeler, Dr. Mm-hmm. Keeler, a certain younger surgeon in town, who I think is doing a great job in developing this, has really helped work with the state and Judy Gabriel, I should also mention her name as well, in the emergency department oversees trauma force as well. they have really worked with the state to try to really raise our game. And I wasn't here a couple of years ago, but from what I can see, they really have. I mean, they're very engaged with the state authorities on the trauma system. They measure everything, ridiculously so sometimes, but it's what they have to do. So every major trauma, you get a trauma band. And the reason I say that is because when you get that little band on your wrist, that triggers all sorts of stuff, all sorts of flow work, paperwork, because they're going to measure how we treat you. And I'm going to be looked at. How did I deliver my care? Did I deliver my care at a proper time? Did I get you transferred in a proper amount of time? So there's a lot to it. But I think this community should be very proud of what these people have done behind the scenes. I have nothing to do with this. The work that I have seen done, I'm very impressed with.
Awesome. So just for our listeners, when you say they work closely with the state is actually reviewing every case, I guess, trauma case, or how does that actually work?
Well, we have an internal review process, but then the state comes back every year and audits us.
Oh, wow.
And they look at things that we do, and they'll look at different cases, and they look at how we handle things, and they look at things we should do differently. And they say, you're taking too long to transfer, or, you know, you're not doing enough certain types of ultrasounds on these particular patients and things. And so they really look at the whole scope of what we do, and they give us an action plan, or things that we need to create the plan for, actionable items, and we create an action plan and move it forward. And what I think is amazing is the people at this hospital take it very seriously. They were audited right before I came and had done a great job, but they're always going to find something because we're never perfect, right? We're a system. Yeah. Systems are never perfect. But the group took it to heart right away. They had an action plan in place within days and just addressed everything. I mean, it's really, really good work.
So just kind of in closing here, I just wanted to ask you, what would your recommendation be to our community? What would you like them to know about our emergency department?
Well, I would love to run a perfect emergency department, but we aren't. But what I would like them to know is any failure hurts. I mean, we don't like to drop the ball. Mm-hmm. I can tell you we're working hard to raise our game every day. I think we've raised our game. But we have a lot of work to do, and we're going to continue to try to raise our game because this community deserves that, and we as professionals, that's what we want to be part of as well. So I'm excited to be here. I feel very supported by the hospital. I think I'm on the same page as the administration when it comes to where we'd like to go, and to me that's not always the case. I've been in enough hospitals to know that's not common, but it's just the way it is here, and I love the culture of the building. Can I mention one thing about the hospital?
Absolutely.
It's silly, but I worked all weekend, and we talked about this yesterday in the emergency department. First of all, the hospital has great food. And the cafeteria staff, they take real pride in what they do. And on the weekends, they'll just do special things for the workers and say, hey, we got these street tacos we did today. Come try these. And I know it's silly, but it has to do with the culture of the place. And you see it, and it tells me that those people are being told they're appreciated, and they're giving it back. And it says a lot about the hospital. It's more than the food. It's more than the cafeteria. It's a culture that's been created in that hospital that I think is continuing to grow, and I want to be part of that and want to help that. And I'm just really proud to be part of this hospital.
Incredible. Well, you're listening to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System, and joining me today on the program is Dr. Robert McCauley, the medical director of our emergency room at Good Shepherd Healthcare System.